The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. There have been warning signs recently of an emerging toxic drug crisis in Europe. Heroin still dominates the opioid market, but the rise of nitazenes, which are a class of powerful synthetic opioids, poses a growing threat. As we've been seeing with fentanyl here in the northern part of Abiyala, referred to colonially as North America, nitazenes in Europe and the UK are often found in counterfeit medications or mixed with other substances. This toxic, unregulated drug supply increases the risk of overdose and complicates harm reduction efforts. To explore this topic in more detail, the Correlation European Harm Reduction Network, in collaboration with the Annaliffe Drug Project, the Trimbos Institute, and the City of Zurich, held a webinar May 9th with several European experts. On today's show, we're going to hear portions of that webinar. Let's start with Leo Jeffries, Operations Manager at the European Network of People Who Use Drugs. Their presentation was entitled Synthetic Opioids in Europe, Drug User Groups' Perspectives and Approaches.
So I'm going to talk to you briefly about some things that we have already done and some things that we would like to see promoted and put forward. So back in the summer of 2023, there was a spike in overdoses in the Midlands and the UK. And at the time we heard about it, we published this advice on our Instagram, including the usual advice of carry naloxone and don't use alone, but with this added advice of staggering doses that came out of a situation where people went to use together, all used at the same time, and then all three of them overdosed. So this was kind of some added advice that we put into our social media campaign at the time. At the same time that we heard about the spike in Birmingham, I was in Canada and I was meeting with some colleagues at the Canadian Institute for Substance Use Research, which is a research body made up of people with living experience of substance use and other research professionals. And I asked them, you know, what if you could tell Europe something right now, what would you tell them? Because this is happening right now. We're starting to see synthetic opiates. If you'd known what you know now back in 2016 when they first started experiencing the spike, what would they have wanted to implement? And they came back with an immediate list. First of all, heroin assisted treatment, are also known as diacetylmorphine assisted treatment. By the time they had implemented this in Canada, it was too late. People's individual tolerances were quite high, and heroin assisted treatment couldn't hold people, so they needed additional interventions. So they were saying, implement this now, you know, Europe wide. There is precedence. You know, we have a previous study from 1994 in Switzerland. We have the Salome project in Canada. We have had a pilot in the UK in Middlesbrough that sadly lost funding. And there's also an EUDA report showing reductions in criminal activity. So implementing HAT, heroin-assisted treatment, would be a good first step. Consumption rooms, including inhalation, we see now a lot of people not only injecting, but inhaling, smoking. And we know that overdoses can happen through any route of administration. So providing safe spaces with different routes of administration would be imperative. Drug checking. Again, as my co-presenter mentioned, drug checking in terms of providing monitoring, early warning systems, and monitoring without criminalization and without police seizures. So drug checking that is accessible and in front of house. Peer-to-peer naloxone, again, I would really like to push this. This is something that is achievable, a European-wide prescription-free access to naloxone. We're starting to see overdose interventions as well now solely using oxygen, specifically with nitazenes, as we start to see an increase in overdoses, non-fatal overdoses, recurring instances of people affecting their brain. Oxygen is just a good tool as well to push, as well as peer-to-peer naloxone. And EuroInput did a technical briefing on peer-to-peer naloxone. You can see that at our website. I can give the link at the end there. And then, of course, the ultimate goal being safe supply, looking at cooperative growing and compassion club models. If you don't know about DULF, you can look them up. And they're, doing great things in Canada despite a quite dire situation. So, I want to talk briefly about the link between law enforcement seizures and overdose, increasing overdoses. So, in 2023, the EUDA said that nitazenes emerged following control measures to reduce the availability of fentanyl derivatives. So, as we see, these synthetic opiates being seized and being taken off the market, we see another one popping up. And I'm predicting that as we see more seizures of nitazenes, we will see new synthetic opiates popping up. So rather than recreating or feeding into this wheel of seizure and new drugs popping up, can we kind of put a cog in the wheel and or put a wrench in the cog or whatever you say to kind of stop this cycle of criminalization and toxic supply? There are some studies linking law enforcement seizures of drugs and overdoses. Most of these studies have been done in the States. Maybe we need more research like this done in Europe in terms of the correlation between an increase in seizures and an increase in overdoses. And again, so how do we monitor drugs without increasing the harm to people? And from a community-led perspective, Input published this best practice on community-led monitoring for people who use drugs, looking at people who use drugs continuing to provide responsive, effective services and services that promote health and well-being. And there was a study done in 2016 at a market level monitoring function. Drug checking uses consumer data directly from people who use drugs. That's more reflective of the market than police seizure. So right before I touch on this last point, I would just like to say early warning systems should not be for people who are seeking to further exacerbate the situation through criminalization and prohibitionist drug policy. They should be for people who use drugs to promote health and our human right to informed consent and choice. And this is the last point I'm going to touch on now. This is a presentation I recently saw in Bogota, Colombia, at the Harm Reduction International Conference. It's done by Fraser Perry at the Release. They were looking at nitazenes as a drug of choice, which is a great way to end in terms of we're talking about different ideas. So people who use nitazenes, who actively seek them out. Psychonauts and drug nerds, people purchasing on the dark web, people wanting to experience different drugs, different experiences, that kind of thing. People who use heroin, as my co-presenters said, and as I was speaking about, people might have nitazenes unwittingly in their supply. They'll be using it, and then their tolerance will increase. So again, they'll start to actively seek that out to kind of hold them. To experience the same level of high or therapeutic dose. People who are on OAT, so not everybody uses drugs for maintenance. Some people like to use drugs for maintenance and for other experiences. So OAT, if you're on a high dose of, say, methadone, you might seek out nitazenes or something stronger to experience a little bit of that high or a little bit of that euphoria. Challenges for people who use nitazenes who want to access treatment. There is a lack of training for clinicians. OAT prescribing is not fit for nitazene substitution. Again, methadone prescribing won't hold people who are seeking something stronger. And lastly, just some harm reduction advice. There's no reliable dosing information for nitazenes. Nitazenes coming in pressed pills, unstable mixing. You're not sure how much you're getting in each pill. You can overdose with any route of administration. And overdoses may require more naloxone and oxygen. I'm over my time, so I'm not going to go into this volumetric dosing, but if you're interested in Fraser Perry's research and presentation, I can give you their contact after. It was really, really interesting.
That was Leo Jeffries, operations manager at the European Network of People Who Use Drugs, speaking May 9th on a webinar entitled Nitazenes in Europe, How Should We Prepare? We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Another presenter on that webinar was Matt Southwell, a longtime harm reduction worker and the managing and technical director at COACT Technical Support Limited. His presentation was entitled Nitazene Contamination Hits UK Heroin and Wider Drug Supply, Reflections from Bath Peer-to-Peer Needle and Syringe Program.
I'm going to speak from the peer-to-peer needle and syringe program that we run here in Bath. It's a volunteer program run through our drug user group, Respect, where the equipment is provided by the local drug services, but we distribute through local drug suppliers and other key peers. Let's move on. And if you want to know more about the peer-to-peer needle and syringe program, you can find guidance on the EuroMPID website under their resources section. There's a series of case studies of peer-to-peer needle and syringe programs, including the scheme in Bath. So let me just reflect on the sort of recent experience of nitazenes in the UK. Leo mentioned the sort of first concerns that we had around an outbreak in June 2023. We saw 30 deaths in Birmingham and 5 deaths in the neighbouring city to Bath in Bristol. I met we were doing the SIP study, the Safe Inhalation Pipe Provision Study, with Professor Magdalena Harris in Bristol. We were doing peer interviews in the weeks after this incident, and I met a local peer who had witnessed three of the peers going into a local park, all but having brought heroin together. They all had naloxone on them, but because they all injected at the same time, they all died together. So really highlighting some of this more sensitized messaging around nitazenes. This was one that sort of was really hitting across the scene, impacting on prescribed medications or assumed legal medications brought off the internet, which were actually fake, plus also cuts in the heroin supply. So this was our first incident. Back in June, started to raise some alarm bells. We then saw sort of an ongoing sort of bubbling away of these incidents, particularly in the west of England. We saw them in the neighbouring areas of Somerset and Wiltshire. And then in Bath, we started to see low-level drug suppliers buying nitazenes off the internet and cutting them at a lower level. That meant they were reasonably easy to take out of the drug scene, and people had choice and were able to move to buy other supplies. However, in March this year, we had this batch of heroin. This is a batch that was seen all over the UK. We think it originated in Scotland through supply networks in Scotland. We had it tested positive to nitazene strips. The reason we tested it was because peers were coming back saying that they were feeling lightheaded, their heads were spinning. People felt it was a, no, people were knocked out and very sedated. It was a really unpleasant experience. Interestingly, one of the peers who was asked to test the drug by their suppliers actually picked up that the drug that this was contaminated, and because she'd actually used antipsychotics, she actually recognized the antipsychotic medication in the drugs. But it also, and this highlights that we're not just seeing no one cut. This was a drug that once we had Bath University test it, came back positive for nitazenes, an antipsychotic, and a veterinary anaesthetic. So really, challenging products that made people feel very uncomfortable. Dr. Jenny Scott from Bristol University then tracked back and saw that this batch was also associated with 30 overdoses in Camden in London, and was really impacting across the UK. How do we respond? Well, I think one of the things we realized was that really we were lucky. The cut wasn't significant enough to cause deaths, even though one of our peers was asked to test this drug early on. It took about 5 days, even with peers intervening. It took us a few days to get it tested and to identify what was happening. By about that point, the drug had been used widely across the drug scene. Had it been stronger, people would have died. We put information out through a mobile phone chain. You can see the text message that we sent out. We encouraged peers to give feedback to their drug suppliers. We tried to push the drug off the drug supply scene. hard to do when drug dealers want to recover their money. So even though the drugs were then coming back again, because we had this working relationship with Bath University, we were able to get the drugs tested. There were limitations of the test. We just get told what's in it. We don't get told how strong it is, or no, we don't get given the information that people really need. We also put out social media posts that were widely shared, and then we have this reporting system run by Release that allows us to pass information back out through the public health system. So we were lucky in this incident. It could have been much more serious. The lessons that we would learn, Leo has highlighted some of these points already, highlighting the need to not use alone, to carry more naloxone, two sets of Pranoxad, to witness each other using, and to use schemes like Buddy Up, which are these virtual witnessing schemes, recognizing that test strips are useful early in the response, but already, yes, they're allowing peers to test and find what's out there. But the question is, what do you then do with those results? Now, the guidance on the back of the packet takes you to US websites. There's no clear reporting system for people to share information. As we sent out text messages, we got other peers saying, "Oh yeah, we also tested that positive and didn't know what to do about it." So I think we need a much more strategic public health response. People at the bottom end of the system are already looking for these drugs because they see it as strong heroin. And I think we need to be really careful about how we message warnings around strong drugs. And the reality is, no, once nitazenes are heavily embedded in the drug scene, it's actually quite difficult to avoid them. And if you've got a habit, you've got a habit and you've got to use. So I think, no, that really highlights the need to give people alternative pathways like safe supply. And I think if we're going to use testing meaningfully, we need to be able to offer dealers at a higher level testing opportunities, and to give people meaningful information like how strong is this heroin, what's the drug cuts in it, so that people can really make informed choices. Just to highlight how significant this is, last weekend we had a second round of positive tests of nitrazenes. I spoke to one drug supplier a couple of days ago who said to me he is finding it impossible to buy a supply that doesn't have nitazenes. He's passed test strips up the chain, and nobody can buy nitazene, heroin at the moment in Bath, that doesn't test positive for nitazenes. We're just about to have three batches picked up for testing, and we think all three of them are likely to be testing positive, which means then there is no choice in Bath other than to buy heroin with nitazenes in it. So that's really just a highlight, a real quick, fast response. I think we need to have a much clearer strategic response. This is something that impacts across the whole country, so you can see it popping up in different areas of the country, and we need to have a much better strategic way of getting information out there, and we need to expand the range of harm reduction responses.
That was Matt Southwell, harm reduction advocate and managing and technical director at COACT Technical Support Limited, speaking May 9th on a webinar hosted by Correlation European Harm Reduction Network, which was entitled Nitazenes in Europe: How Should We Prepare? We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear one more speaker from this webinar. Dominique Shorey is head of the Drug Information Center for the city of Zurich, Switzerland.
We were starting the discussion about getting prepared for synthetic opioids like around 2 years ago, I would say, after the change in the opium market, as it was mentioned, after those outbreaks in Birmingham and other cities. And we were realizing quickly that we are in a very privileged situation, a bit similar that to what Laura described. So the city of Zurich is very privileged in terms of the political support that harm reduction has, in terms of funding, of course, and also in terms of the broad network of harm reduction services that we have. But still, we also realize that we as harm reduction services are quite good in reacting to changes on the drug market. So if something new is arriving, synthetic cannabinoids, crack cocaine use, a global pandemic and things like that. We are very good in adapting our services, but we're not that good in getting prepared to possible changes on the drug market. And we've seen it as a more or less unique historical opportunity to get prepared for a possible change on the drug market. The signs were there, the indicators were there. There was a lot of information that moved us to start the discussion about getting prepared. We had basically three objectives in this action plan. First one was increasing knowledge about the market, about what's going on the drug market. Secondly, to have a look on medical interventions, especially the OIT. And a third one was raising awareness among the people who are using opioids and also among and professionals. Here are some local examples from Zurich. We've had the last year two cases of also faked oxycodone pills. On the left side, you can see one with only containing nitazenes, and on the right side, it's a mixture of nitazene and benzodiazepine. Sorry, it was a bit too quick. The second example, this got also a bit similar to the red alert from the Netherlands, a lot of media attention. This was quite worrying because, as you can see on the left side, the manufacturing of the package, so of the blister, was made really, really professional. So you cannot see it, whether it's a fake pill or not. So it's a really professional manufacturing. But on the right side, if you have a look at the pills that are inside that blister, you can see that the manufacturing of the pill itself is quite poor. So the size is very different. So it's quite likely to think that there are different amounts of nitazenes in those different pills. We also realized that this is really concerning because there is some kind of we would say like urban legend going on among people who are buying medication pills on the illegal market, that if you have it like in an original package, it gives you some kind of security that it's an original. But it's not. We were collaborating, of course, on the right side with the correlation to also raise awareness among other European countries. Also the WHO has a known system on alerts for fake medications. We were also in contact with them and of course also with the EUDA to raise awareness as far as possible. So what does it mean specifically for the three objectives that I've mentioned about increasing knowledge in the market? We have a really, really broad network of our drug checking services, very big. We have like among 4,000 samples per year that we are testing, but we were not on a regular basis present in the drug consumption rooms of the city of Zurich. So we started that 6 months ago, I guess. And we were also starting to collect feedbacks from people who are using opioids in a more structured way. We are currently establishing a database for the drug consumption room so that every consumption is getting into that database, that we know a bit more about what people expect to use and what's inside their substance afterwards. Then we have also a project of implementing fentanyl and but mostly nitazene test strips. We see it as a complementary measure, so it's not a replacement for drug checking, but it's a good tool also to break the ice between the professionals and the service user, because if you start to use fentanyl and nitazene test strips, you have at least a conversation about the risks, about what you expect, about what you see. So we see it like also as a good tool of communication. Then we also do monitoring in online drug shops and also Telegram channels. We're present there. We also started to contact actively vendors if we see something, if some source might be suspicious, so to ask them whether they can remove certain samples, and with kind of success, I would say. Then what we also started to do is to, if there are unusual intoxications, especially in the drug consumption rooms, we now are able to send the residues from the pipe or from the syringe or whatever was used to the lab, trying to at least identify whether synthetic opioids were involved in that intoxication. And then we've also realized that we have some gaps in terms of sharing information between different organizations like the forensic labs, harm reduction services, and paramedic services. For example, paramedics, they have almost in-time statistics about naloxone administrations in their daily business, but we didn't have access to that database so far. Expansions of medical intervention, the focus is really on one hand on the opioid agonist treatment. So we want to make the access as low threshold as possible, because getting access to heroin assistant treatment is one very, very effective preventive measure for avoiding problems with the illegal market. Also reviewing the prescription practice. Also what was mentioned about when people are starting to use nitazenes, are our guidelines of treating people still adequate to people who are using nitazenes? And then this might be also a bit surprising for other countries. Also, Laura, you mentioned it. We have a bit of similar situation in Switzerland with naloxone. So naloxone is only available by prescription. It's not covered by health insurance. This is not a good situation, and we are now trying to have at least a creative or pragmatic approach to deal with that current legal framework, because to change the legal framework is maybe a bit more complicated for us. And then also about raising awareness, we quickly realized that especially police officers, they are very, very afraid of getting in touch with synthetic opioids. There are also a lot of alarmistic, just fake information. YouTube is full of dramatic scenes of police officers who touched samples and then overdosed. So we really need to have to be clear that there is actually no risk of getting an overdose through skin contact. This is really important to highlight this. And then also to prepare target group orientation information. There are different groups that might be affected. On one hand, younger people who are using benzodiazepines, opioid painkillers in a more recreational way, and then maybe people who are visiting drug consumption rooms, so they have different needs. They also have different maybe sources of information, and we need to adapt this constantly. Of course, peer involvement. We have two peer projects already existing in the city of Zurich that are involved in the whole discussion, and training models and information material. So to conclude, already mentioned, it's a unique historical opportunity, I would say, to anticipate a change in a specific drug market. The focus is clearly on harm reduction. It's really, really important to have the people that are affected at the table, and also the collaboration between different players. As you may know, Switzerland is not part of the European Union, so it's not always easy for Switzerland to collaborate with different groups. But as a city, we have more possibilities to collaborate. We're part of the TEDI network. We're part of correlation network. So we have a lot of we can learn a lot from each other from this international collaboration.
That was Dominik Schury, manager of the City of Zurich's Drug Information Center, speaking May 9th on a webinar hosted by Correlation European Harm Reduction Network, which was entitled Nitazenes in Europe, How Should We Prepare? Find that entire webinar and a host of other materials at the Correlation website, which is correlation-net.org. That's correlation-net.org. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.